What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Crowdcast. We're live on YouTube. Maybe you're listening later on an audio podcast. But we're also coming live from a couple of different continents.
Whoa! Hey, what's up, bruv? I'm in London.
Whoa,
great. You said that wrong.
Now, this is, we should probably explain what you're doing out there. Justin is actually our correspondent on the ground covering the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II.
Justin,
what was it like being a pallbearer at the funeral? Just talk us through it.
The hardest part was stopping the knocking coming from inside the casket. It was crazy.
Oh, dude.
Got to make sure they're dead, man. You got to make sure they're dead. They always come back for one last scare.
Yet. Not dead yet.
I was here actually for the, I'm here for an unrelated work project, but the Queen's funeral day was a day off work here in London. Everything was shut down. And truly, we were working in a bar for this shoot we're doing, and people very upset. A woman shushed one of the other people I was working with, not me for a change. And then she later came up and was like, I'm so sorry I shushed you. And she's got tears running down her face. It's a very emotional time here. And seriously. Yeah.
How dare you?
And then, but that was yesterday. And today, and everyone's back to normal.
Queen like that. Man. Come on, man.
I'm not disrespecting her.
Yes. I'm sorry for framing this up in a terrible way. For any of our UK listeners, then, really apologize. And I mean that sincerely.
That's not horrible. Well, nothing is offensive here, right? Sound off in the comments.
I did say kill the queen twice. I feel like that's probably offensive. Also, I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a spider on top of her casket, and I couldn't help but think maybe it was trying to make her into Spider-Man, but it was too late.
Wow. It's too late.
that's a third awful thing. You said three awful things.
I really did. I should.
You think that radioactive spider is like, give me one last bite. I put it off, and I should bite.
Well, that's how Marvel Zombies starts, right?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Great transition. Why don't we go to our first guest? This first guest that we're going to have here is a longtime friend of the show, and he's got his own comic book out called CWL that is all about wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Spear, hello.
Howdy. What's up? What's happening, guys? Thanks for having me.
Mike Spear Jr. Sorry, I forgot the junior when I was introduced.
That's all right.
It's a sick background, my father's name.
Yes. Before we get into it, you want to talk us through what's going on behind you, because that's what Pete is very interested in right now.
Yeah, there's a lot. Most of it was gifts, and I have no place else to put it except for a tiny corner in my basement where my kids won't destroy it. I know, like the big, you know, gaudy poster of the cover of my comic book, that was a gift from my wife, so that's nice.
That's nice.
There's some Hal Haney artwork up there, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan. I got a stormtrooper helmet back there. There's all kinds of business
stormtrooper
going on.
Helmet.
Yeah, that was also a last minute gift from my dad for Father's Day, I think. So, some place to put it where my kids won't destroy it, but I'm pretty sure it's already got its dings all over it from them trying to play with it.
Laser blaster fire.
The other thing that you have in the background there, though, is the cover of your comic book CWL, which is pretty hardcore is probably the wrong way to describe it, but like it's a wrestling comic book. Like it is a full on wrestling comic book. So talk to us about where the inspiration came from, what the thought behind it is, and take it away.
I mean that's exactly what I'm going for. So CWL, the Championship Wrestling League, it's a wrestling promotion like WWE, like AEW, but it's in a comic book. And like a lot of, you know, there's other wrestling comics people try, like, you know, they do monsters and they do aliens, you know, and all different kinds of wrestling like that. This is straight up reality based wrestling, just like as if you'd see it on TV. I mean, I've been a wrestling fan since as long as I can remember. So like I was born in 84, and I'm pretty sure the first wrestling tapes that my aunt got me came out in 85. So I've been hooked forever.
That's like classic great wrestling stuff. That's like Junkyard Dog. Beware stuff right there.
Yeah, the first.
Keep getting deep, but question: your aunt gave you these tapes. Talk to me about that. Is she also a wrestling fan, or is she just like, I know what to
do? She was not. I don't believe she really was a huge wrestling fan. I remember I had like a postcard of Hulk Hogan that was on my wall. That was one of my earlier memories. And that was one of the tapes. One of the tapes was, you know, Hulk Hogan winning the title and stuff like that. And then the other tape was like the Road Warriors in AWA. So I had like, you know, pretty flashy Hulk Hogan, and then I had dark and gritty Road Warriors that really wasn't in the Northeast. So, you know, two different aspects of wrestling. It opened my eyes to all of it out there. But I don't think she was. I don't even know where those tapes came from. Just know I've had them forever, and that's what hooked me right from the start.
Cool. And so, go ahead.
Sorry, again.
No, I was just going to say... Right. No, Mike, you take it away, please.
I was going to keep elaborating. Yeah, I mean, I've been a wrestling fan forever. I mean, I tried my hand at pro wrestling for a few years. I've been a comic fan forever. So I really, it was time, you know, when I really wanted to make a comic, making it a wrestling comic was the only thing that I could do.
So I was going to ask, since you are creating your own wrestling promotion here, what is involved in that versus you have a whole roster of people who are working on their characters, you're creating the individual characters. So how'd you approach that?
So what I did with a lot of stuff, especially to help the artist, is I took two guys and kind of compared them. Like a lot of the guys you'll see are very similar to wrestlers, old and new, or they're a combination of two different guys. So it's very much like, okay, this guy, you know, he is a mix between like you see the guy on the page right there. He's a mix between Bray Wyatt and Cactus Jack. Or the announcers you see on the first page. That's like 1990 Jim Ross mixed with, you know, a more distinguished Jesse the Body Ventura. That's my announce team. So, yeah, so using that was an easier way to get the artist to say, and even, you know, for reference material to go back and say, okay, well, now I see what he's going for here. Let me put those guys together. And then, I mean, I go through everything to make the action a little more authentic, because, again, it's straightforward wrestling. I try to make the action flow like it would in a normal wrestling match. So I do, you know, detailed panels, you know, all the action, and they even mention, oh, here's what's coming up in the next one. So this guy needs to have he needs to be in the right position. And then, you know, so there's a little bit of back and forth, not a ton, because I try to look for artists too who have, you know, who are into wrestling, so they get it as well. But yeah, I try to go as detailed as possible to make it as authentic as possible.
Even in the WWE comics that come out, I feel like there's not as much wrestling. They're sort of going into more backstory and more other things. This feels like one of the most faithful depictions of wrestling I've seen in any comic.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, the ones I've read, they all try to veer off from that. Like Mick Foley actually wrote a WWE Superstars comic a few years ago where he took all WWE Superstars and they put them in like a real world scenario. Yeah. You know, there was really no wrestling in it, but they just took their characters and twisted it around. A long time ago in the early 90s, Marvel put out a WCW comic book. And that was something that was a real big inspiration for this, because when I read it, again, it was wrestling, and it was wrestlers that I watched on TV, and they were wrestling in a comic. I just wanted as much wrestling as possible. But then I'd see them do moves and be like, that's not really what a pile driver looks like, and that's not what a clothesline looks like. And there was certain things like that that turned me off to it. And then you had contracts and all other kinds of stuff that they couldn't use guys anymore. And the book had to run its course because it just didn't make any sense. Guys weren't with WCW anymore. So the book pretty much, you know, had to flop. So this is the way of correcting all that stuff that I wanted to see in a wrestling comic book and just making it myself.
That's awesome. One of the things that I think is particularly cool about this project, and we're talking about this a little bit before you came on, you can get the comic digitally on Amazon and a couple of other places. But if you want physical copies, you can go to Etsy, right? What led to selling something on Etsy? Because honestly, we've interviewed a lot of creators, independent creators. I don't think I've seen anybody selling on Etsy before. So very curious to hear about this.
So honestly, it's simplicity. I have an Etsy store where the guy who actually did the cover for CWL, he did the cover for CWL number 2. He did designs for these enamel pins that we had made, just to make some extra money on the side. And Etsy was the best place to sell them. It's easy to print shipping labels. And honestly, like, it's all, you know, it's guerrilla comic book making. Like, I'm looking at the boxes of comics right now that are there. So when you order it on Etsy, it's me putting it in the mailer and, you know, bagging and boarding it and shipping it out. So Etsy just was a very easy way to do it. It's kind of a bummer because I feel like the exposure isn't there. And I know when I would see a comic on Etsy, I wouldn't overly feel like going to get it because it's very, very independent. But then doing it, I mean, like I said, it's, you know, and I get a lot of comments on the quality of the book and stuff like that, which I probably overdid it on because I didn't know what I was doing.
You can't be mad about quality.
That's true. Yeah, you can't complain about it. But then, you know, getting it on Etsy, it's just easy. It's like taking a chance, you know.
Well, I appreciate you.
I love that. Sorry, real quick. I love that, though, like, you found your platform that's working for you. And I feel like we're in this wild west where, like, everyone's finding their spot on the internet, and it may change. But it's really, I think it's really exciting to see people finding something that's working and connecting with people.
Yeah, and that, like, I've put in, there's a few comic book stores in the area that I've dropped off some comics at. Like, there's actually just a literal wrestling store that's, you know, a little, like, about 10 minutes up the road from me, and I put some comics in there to sell. Right. I mean, anywhere I can.
Yeah. I love the idea, like, come on down to the wrestling store, because we're going to
Yeah, it's exactly, and it's dedicated to wrestling. So, I mean, I put some wrestling comics in the comic book store, wrestling comics in the wrestling store. So, you know, a little bit for everybody.
Nice.
What? What do they sell in the wrestling store? Just to, before we go over
pile drivers, camel clutches.
Yeah, yeah. You walk in there, get a few teeth knocked out, and then like, hey, thanks for coming. No, it's a guy who actually runs. His name's Tommy Fierro. He runs a wrestling promotion here in the Northeast, and he's got a lot of connections to wrestlers because he's been running shows and autograph signings for years. I mean, he has replica wrestling titles, autographed merchandise, all old school VHS tapes, tons of old wrestling action figures. So it's really just, it's a wrestling merchandise store, not an actual wrestling store, which ironically, though, what got me back into comics, when I was a wrestler, there was a wrestling store right across the street from a comic book, or a wrestling school right across the street from a comic book store. Those
fights must have been legendary, just like total, just a West Side Story thing from other side of the street. Wrestling, comic books. How do they ever agree, you know?
Well, the deal, I mean, they go hand in hand. The owner of that's Funny Books in Lake Hiawatha. He's a super huge wrestling fan. So he was happy to have the wrestling school right across the street. So many wrestlers that I know were huge comic book fans. So, I mean, it got me back into comic books big time, because I could go and stop in the comic book store and pick up this week's issues before I went in and went to practice.
Awesome. Now, Pete, do you have any questions you want to ask, or are you good at this point?
No, you blew past mine.
Wait, hold on. I did?
No, ask it. Come on. Yeah. Pete, take it away.
No, well, first off, I appreciate your passion and what you're trying to do. And I also appreciate the fact that, you know, you're taking care of your quality art by bagging and boarding them before you send them off. That's great. And yeah, man, congratulations. It's nice to see someone bringing, you know, what they have a passion for and putting it out there for people who also have a passion for it, because it's going to hit home for them, and they're going to appreciate the fact that somebody knows wrestling, is doing a wrestling comic book. And that's going to translate. So, yeah, congrats, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah, because that's exactly, you know, what I wanted to. I mean, I've been trying to be a comic book writer for a long time. I've entered the Top Cow talent hunt like 6 times, I think, and came up short every time. And then finally, I said, "The hell with it! I need to make my own book." And
there you go.
Wrestling was the only way to go.
Awesome. That's, and you're working on a second issue already, right?
Yeah, right now the second issue is in production. The whole first arc is completely plotted out. But right now, the second issue is being drawn, and color is a part of it. And then we'll be on issue 3 and off to the races, hopefully.
Nice.
Awesome. Mike, congratulations on the book. It's very cool.
Thank you, guys.
Really looking forward to the second one, and I'll see you at the wrestling store.
Roy.
Thank you so much,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
Thank you so much, man.
Later, Mike. Wow, Alex cutting a promo right in the middle of it.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I felt very uncomfortable. Did that come off, or did it seem normal? Did it seem natural? Yeah.
No, but your wrestling name is the Uncomfortable Brooklynite, right?
Yeah, I'm the only one.
We're the Uncomfortable Brooklynite.
The book, again, is called CWL. It's from Mike Spear, and you can get it on Etsy as well as Amazon and other places. And we are going to bring in
I just want to shout out our other wrestling names. I'm the Unfortunate Time Zone, obviously. And Pete, your wrestling?
Pete, the Rage Cage LePage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I made that one up. Yours is real. I know you've said that before in your life.
Nope.
Shouts to that.
No, first time.
Why don't we bring in our next guest? He is one of our favorite creators on the show, and he has a new book coming out from Image Comics called Old Dog. Declan Shalvey, you probably also know him from a lot of other things. Declan, welcome to the show. Hello.
Hello there. I didn't see you. I was just working here on my new project called Old Dog.
Oh, didn't see you there. I'm working so hard.
Now I mentioned Declan, you're based in Ireland and Justin's actually in London right now. You guys should hang out, right? That's basically
not the same place.
Oh,
okay. But I would like to thank Justin on behalf of all Irish people for single-handedly murdering the Queen. We've been waiting a while for it to happen, and you know, just need the right guy.
I'm feeling that Irish energy, let me be honest.
London's a great spot, actually. I'm dying to get over it. I'm actually going over next month for a show, so I can't wait.
There we go. Justin, leave him a little secret something somewhere just so you can find it when he gets to London. I'm sure there's not a lot of people.
What it is or where it is, but you'll find it.
I'll find it.
Speaking of a secret special something before we get into the interview portion, now our CBC chef, our comic book club chef, Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullet. He has been curating drinks for us every week for a while now. And every once in a while, I don't want to create any expectations. This is always going to happen. But every once in a while, he gets inspired and he creates a drink based on one of our guests. And he did just that for this week's episode. So I wanted to bring it up and share it here. It is inspired by your new book, Declan. Hope you don't mind. It is called The Old Dog. And I'm going to read it off for anybody listening on the podcast version, but it is Irish whiskey, mezcal, Benedictine liqueur, Peychaud's bitters, a squeeze of lemon and a lemon peel on the directions here. A drink certainly to get your attention after waking up from years in a coma, feeling strong and bitter about losing it all. Take all the liquid ingredients, stir them with ice, then rub the peel around the rim and express it over and drink and drop it in. Now go get your life back.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
So there you go. Need the drink
tonight. Oh man, I've got a thirst now.
It's real good. I'll say Brett nailed it because it's got like a little bit of smokiness from the mezcal. You got like a little bit of the leather from the whiskey.
A little fortitude.
Feels like you're drinking a dog. Does it
get you drunk?
That's important.
I bet it does.
Have you been watching the first part of the show?
ingredients. Just my face, you know.
But let's talk about this book, because this book is so good and it's so trippy. It comes out September 28th from Image Comics. And I don't want to spoil anything, but one of the things that I loved about this book, like we went through a little bit of the description in the description of the drink, but I read the whole issue and you get to the end of the first issue. And again, without spoilers, I was like, wait, what? And went back and read the whole first issue again. And I imagine that's how you structured it. So when you're doing something like that, that demands that second read, and I know I'm being very vague. I don't know how much you want to get into the concept of it. How do you structure something like that? How do you start approaching
it? Could you be a bit more vague, please?
So it's a comic book and there's pages.
I mean, is it a comic? I mean, it's pages stapled together. I mean, let's not get, you know, I don't like to get bogged down in labels, you know?
Don't let the uncomfortable Brooklynite throw you off. Give
it a little bit. Where was I going with that? Yeah, I have no idea what you're sorry. I got my joke in. That's all that mattered. I didn't have to get your
question. That's how we live our lives on this podcast.
You were going to talk a little bit about the book.
The book. I will say that I remember when I was working on Moon Knight with Warren, some complaints were that it was a fast read. And in whatever it's been like 8 years since the book came out, people are still reading it. I don't necessarily equate like words with value of, you know, like,
hell yes,
there's plenty of like books you'll read that are like loads and loads of dialogue, but you'll never read them again. I like to do books that you're going to go back again and again. So if I can like make the reader go back and read a second time immediately, I feel like you're getting, you know, twice the value for the money you spent.
Let me ask you on that. So how do you do that? How do you make a book that makes people go back and give it that second read like right away?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Like, I mean, not every single issue will do that, but I mean, for the first issue, I kind of feel that, it's tough, you know, you're selling somebody on a concept, and it's a tough thing. Like, if I was doing Deadpool or whatever, everybody knows what the character is. With an image book, you've got to sell somebody on the concept before they've even read the book. Right. So, fine, you do that, but then you don't want to sell, like, I don't want you to read the story I've just been telling you about. I want to kind of find something else to hook you at the very end. So I think I came up with a device to show Jack as he is now and show Jack as he was, but instead of it being obvious, just kind of mix things up a little, that hasn't given too much away. But I mean, it's not, to me, it's like, you know, but that's not the hook of the series necessarily, because I mean, you know, going in that this is basically, he's kind of like a super spy. You just don't know how. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we're all going in knowing what it is. So, but I don't want you to be bored by the time you get to the end of the issue. So I just knew I needed something to kind of just like snap the reader into the, ooh, whoa, wait a second. Even though we end in the same place where we would have gotten to anyway.
Well, the other thing that I'll mention in terms of like selling people on the book, not that you're supposed to judge a book by its cover, but this is such a striking cover. It's the sort of thing that demands you pick it up and at least find out what's going on inside. So from an artistic perspective, how do you hit that? How did you structure that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do a lot of covers, and literally the job is, you know, to judge the book by the cover, you know. But there's some things, like there's some limitations. I can show you on the video. There is that's the pencils that I did for the cover. So it's a full cover, but the way I wanted to design it, I like comics that have their own identity. And if I ever do books for a series, be it, you know, Marvel or wherever else, I like you to know what the book is from the cover alone. The image will let you know it's a new issue, but like you can tell from across the room, oh, the new. I remember when we were doing Dead Man Logan, like I like you to know what the book is. So I wanted to go heavy with the title design, but also, like, you know, the way the title design crops the image affects the composition of the image too. And it's cool to be able to kind of play with that stuff. You can't, to be fair to like companies like Marvel, they're actually pretty cool to let you kind of play around with stuff. But I wanted it to be striking. I know limited color scheme grabs you. And while I wouldn't say the cover necessarily tells you much about the story, there's something about a big, ugly face with those, you know, teeth coming. I just wanted to grab the reader's eye, you know?
Well, congratulations. Well,
you've achieved your goal, because there's, it's crazy to see a human face and be, that's a dog, but you did that. you communicated it in just this image. And that to me is like a puzzle where it feels like you're in my brain. So
nailed it. Like, it's not, I don't know, like you don't see that many ugly, wrinkly men on covers of comics, you know. That's basically, if I'm being honest, the concept behind the book is, how do I draw a book where I can draw a craggly face every panel?
Nice.
Well, you're killing it. How difficult is that, though? Because I feel like you're giving yourself a steep climb, sort of not exactly the same thing, but I've certainly heard people complain about, say, Spider-Man, having to draw Spider-Man and being like, oh my God, I got to draw all of these webs every single time. You've created a character that is nothing but wrinkles and scars. So how much of a steep climb is that to do that?
It's fun. Like I've been watching the last season of Better Call Saul, and I don't know about you guys, but I've been watching every wrinkle on Jonathan Banks' face. Every like weirdly like, and I say this with all respect in the world, I love the actor, but like his face is the face of misery. And it's fun to draw like kind of jowly neck, as opposed, because when you draw superheroes all the time, it's, you know, there's a kind of a standard broad shouldered, which is fun to draw, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, getting to draw somebody where like their ears sagging down a bit, or actually the hard thing is stopping drawing more wrinkles, you know, because eventually you can only draw so much before it's even readable. So that's that's keeping me entertained to no end.
I was gonna ask you to do my portrait, but you fully shied me off doing that.
I'll tell you, I drew when I was a kid. I must have been like 8 or something. I was at a family function, and I drew my grandmother. And I remember thinking, like, it was a really good drawing. You know, when you actually do, like, oh, well, I think this is good. And I remember I showed my grandmother, and she didn't talk to me for, like, 2 weeks. So I drew every... And it's different. You know, it's tougher with women, too, because, like, when you draw less when you're drawing a woman. You, like, less is more, you know? It was not flattering at all, and she was not happy with me.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. Sorry about your grandmother being mad at you, but
sorry, ma'am. Hope you don't see this.
I just want to say you are killing this, man. This is, you want to talk about grabbing a reader and not letting go. I was so kind of enthralled and thrown into this world in such an excited and great way, man. I really can't wait for more. This is such a great book, man.
Oh, thanks, guys. Like it's tough because I'm trying to kind of go back to the type of storytelling I did on Moon Knight. Mm-hmm. With like kind of the vibe of the Punisher book that didn't come out, with, like, you know, kind of the mix of crime. I do like a lot of creator-owned crime stuff at Image. I do a lot of kind of superhero stuff at, you know, Marvel, and it's kind of a, I'm hoping it's a nice kind of cross section of all that stuff. And it's tough with, because I'm doing them as self-contained stories, so every issue is a different mission, and it is tough to set it up, tell your story, wrap it up in 20 pages or less with the title pages. So it's tough to find that balance of like compressing to get story in, but also like giving myself the room to blow the, you know, blow the bloody doors off, as Justin would say.
That's what I would say. That's what, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, I do love that, though, because we read so many comics on this show, and I think the ones that do successfully tell a done-in-one story while telling something ongoing, like seeding the mystery at the same time, really are the ones that jump out to us the most, because it gives you that experience you want out of reading a comic, that you feel full.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do a book called Time Before Time at Image as well, and like we... Yeah. Do our best to kind of like, you know, every issue is just, you know, is tells a story and you're satisfied every month, but you're also telling a much larger story. Old Dog, you know, it's different. I'm kind of front running the action and kind of black playing the kind of overall story. But I, especially with something like Old Dog, if I'm leaning into the episodicness of it, like I'm the first person who loves serialized storytelling, and I love shows that take 20 episodes to do feck all. Like I just, you know, I have no problem with that. But if I'm going to do a monthly book, like I'm going to do these as basically 6-issue miniseries, because I want them to be condensed and the best thing I've ever done for 6 months, and then take a break and then do it again. But if that's going to work, it needs to be episodic in a way that like satisfies you every month. Now, the worry with that is, if it's a done in one story, will you bother coming back to it the next one? But I'm hoping that the experience is satisfying enough that you'll come back. And also, I got my comps today, and it's like because I'm being completely indulgent, it's got like a card stock cover, and I just love.
Ooh, oh, yeah. A little
snuggling with your comic.
Look at that. Horrible.
But it is like, you know, I'm trying to do everything I can to make, like, when you pick it up, I want it to feel substantial. Even though it's a 20-page story and it's done in one, I want it to kind of feel like, you know, it's something special. And it's hard to do that. Like, I can't tell you it's something special. You have to kind of feel it. And I'm just doing everything I can to kind of get that feeling across. Sorry, I'm sounding like I'm just losing my mind here now.
No, but let me just sort of echo you or offer my two cents. Like, I feel like when you change the format like that, especially in a medium like comics, where it is about sort of flattening out the story and extending it, when you give yourself those guardrails, it makes it a little more precious, I think. And also all of the stuff that's ongoing in there, I feel like I look for a little bit more, and I'm like, oh, this is a thread, because I know the story is going to come to an end, or feel it as you're reading it coming to an end, but you know there's stuff continuing. And I think that just re-engages us as comic readers who read a lot of comics.
That's cool to hear, man, because like I'm not trying to like harken back to the good old days or anything, but like, you know, I kind of want this to feel a bit like, you know, when Wildstorm in the early 2000s, you know, 2000s, like where things just kind of felt a little sharp, but like lent into the stuff you liked as a kid. You know, like it is effectively, like, it's not a superhero book, but it's not too far off, you know, sci-fi.
Yeah, no,
you know, it means I can do spy stuff, and I can do, you know, action, and I can do crime. It's a nice playground where I can do different types of stories that are broad enough that, like, as an artist, I can keep doing something different. You know, like the second one takes place in Colombia, the next one takes place in Russia, you know, I can just hop around. But I wanted to feel contemporary, even though I'm kind of like harkening it back to 20 years ago.
Well, you definitely feel like that, or at least I felt like that when I was reading it. And again, I'm kind of skirting spoilers here, but with a lot of Image books, I feel like you read the book, and then at the end, there's the sci-fi twist. You're like, okay, this is what the book is about. You have it about a halfway, two-thirds of the way through. And when I hit that, the way that you hit it, both artistically in terms of the story, that's obviously part and parcel with it, but it's very clear that's not the one and only focus of what's going on here. And I like that. I felt like rather than I've read issue one. Great. Now we can get on to issue two, where the meat of the thing happens. The meat of the thing already happened in the first issue.
Hopefully that's the case. Like, that's the curious thing is because, like, when you're doing creator on comics, it's like, well, how do you keep people hooked for issue two and three? In a way, I've already kind of like given it all away in the first issue. But, you know, so I don't know. Will people just go like, that was cool, and then I'm done? Or are they going to want to see what happens, to see the same thing happen again next month?
Pete is nodding yes, an emphatic yes right now.
Yeah, I'm and the very good thing
to use Alex's analogy, like when you sit down for dinner, you want to have meat. And then the next time you sit down, you still want to eat again. Like you keep wanting to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what this comic is. But let me also say, like, I feel like
You're very hungry right now, aren't you?
I'm starving. I mean, it's midnight. It's 12:30 where I am, so I'm losing my mind. I feel like in everything you've said, you've clearly thought about this for so long. How was that? Have you been just like, it feels like you've like seen this book from every angle.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah. I think what happened was I had a very big project on the horizon when COVID hit, and I had a Punisher book that was coming out, and I think something else, and it all went to shit. You know, and I had a big kind of like look at myself and going like, what do I really, really want to do? And I knew I wanted to write and draw my own stuff more. And I've been very lucky at Marvel to do lots of cool projects. But I just remember thinking, you know, I want to have my own thing where I can do just something where I can just keep myself entertained. So I've spent since then, I've just been building this up while I was doing like a few things at Marvel, but the whole time prepping this book to go. And now it's nearly out the gate, and I'm terrified.
Well, just so we're on the same page, who do I got to talk to at Marvel to get that Punisher thing you did out there? Like, well, I've released the Punisher, man.
Like, I don't know, man. There was one issue left to do. So I had four of them done. And the first one, I think the first one was printed even. Just, it was on.
Now so you're really giving Pete bait. That's Pete bait.
Come on, Jordan D. White. Get out there, get this down, and get it out there. Let's go.
The one editor you know the name of.
That's right.
Actually, Jordan was there when I did my live show with I remember. That was before.
That's right.
I don't think I even was working at Marvel yet. Was I Thunderbolts maybe? I can't remember. The early days anyway. But that's a weird thing. But
That was back in, I think, 2010, you said, right?
Yeah. That's the summer I was in New York, and I got my first Marvel gig at the end of that trip. So, like, that was big.
You're welcome.
We have a pitch here in the comments. This is from Eduardo. The pitch is, Pete adopts the Punisher persona in his quest to get Declan's unreleased Punisher series out to the public.
What are you I think that would be too violent.
Yes. 100%.
I did want to ask you mentioned Time Before Time, which I love that book as well, but given about like a little bit of time trippiness going on in Old Dog, by comparison it is so much less an Old Dog than it is Time Before Time. How do you keep that straight? Because I read that book and I'm like, my brain starts melting out of my ears when I'm reading it, because there's so much time jumping going on.
Me and Rory have talked about this. We don't understand why people think it's kind of like, to us, it is the most straight, like, it's not like time travel stories that kind of eat themselves. It starts from A to B. The story moves in one direction. It's the places or times, you know? Mm. So, like, I think people get too bogged down in, they're like, oh, where is this? And it's like, no, it's just a different place. You know, it's not, because the rule we made is that you can't change time. That was the first thing everybody was always asking. It's like, oh, what does it change? X, Y, Z. It's like, no, can't do that. Because then the audience is asking the wrong question. You know, I don't want it to be like, what if you see another version of Tatsuo? It's like, no, it's hard lined. What is interesting is you can look back at you can look back at different times in people's lives without, like, you time travel in your head, basically. You know, you can have a flashback and you can literally show the year and then go back to the year that we were in. So, like, I think, you know, to us it's a very linear story with the character arc. It's linear. It's just the locations change.
Yeah, Alex.
To me it was the stress of what was happening to the characters that was the adding to the brain melt, I think.
Yeah. Well, Tatsuo's getting pretty bad run of it at the moment. And who, hey, I bet everything's going to be fine.
Probably. Can't change that's it. What, so it's
that's
done.
What. Yeah, exactly. That's what we all love to watch, right? Things where everything's going to be fine.
Yep. I mean, you've also, this is a broader question, and you've touched on this a little bit already, but through some of your Marvel work and also through these Image books in particular, you've really stretched yourself out from being an artist to being an artist and a writer, and Old Dog is definitely bringing both of those things together. It's sort of under your sole control. Not exactly, but pretty much. Why that journey for you? Why stretching out in that way? Why was that important?
It's a good question. I would say for cynical reasons, it was to have more control over my career.
Nice.
When you're at Marvel and you're, you know, I was very lucky to get a lot of really good projects there, but you are not in the room making decisions about your own career. Mm-hmm. Being a writer, I've seen that because those conversations where artists are like, well, but then no, you know, I've heard like pretty negative stuff about like, or I've heard stuff that was not complimentary about my work as to why I shouldn't get X, Y, and Z books that I did end up getting. So like, you're never part of that. So part of it was, if I'm writing my own stuff, then I can have a bit more control over what I do.
That you can hire yourself without complaining about yourself.
That's true. Well, also, having one foot in creator-owned, having one foot in work for hire means that I'm never... If I'm really pissed off with like Marvel, then I can just go do my own thing. Like, to be honest, I'm not pissed off. Well, maybe now and then there'll be the odd thing. But, you know, that's not where all my creative energies lie. So if that's really bugging me, then I can go do an Image book. And if I get tired of having to, like, sell that thing all the time because it's not Deadpool, then I can take a break and go do something where I don't need to hustle as much, you know. And I'm very, very lucky to have, you know, both available to me. Some people just get totally in work for hire and that's all they can get. Some people are in creator-owned and it's just so hard of a slog, so... Can't complain, but I think I used my name that I built as an artist to kind of get some writing projects going that probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise, and got to the stage where the writing started seeping into the professional work, which was great. So now I can write something as a job, and I can draw. I think I was basically using a lot of the Marvel work to facilitate creator own work, right. But now I'm in a place where I'm actually doing creator own work and the work for hire stuff is on the side, which is pretty cool.
But it feels like we're in sort of that moment in comics where it is about it's moved shifted back to people who are just like, I am a creative force and could get follow me. Like,
I think there's a lot more writer artists making books now or in the last year or two, I've noticed. And that was another thing. I saw a lot of young artists coming up doing really cool things where they're writing and drawing their own books. And I had to kind of take a hard look at myself and go like, why haven't I done this? These guys have less resources than me and they're doing it. Why the hell am I not? And you know, when you have amazing writers like Warren Ellis, like who want to work with you, like you know, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I've had amazing opportunities, but like, you know, that I think I had done enough of every, you know, I've written, I have drawn, I have colored, and I kind of felt like now is the time. I turned 40 this year. If I'm not going to do my own creator-owned book where I actually put all of this together, if I don't do it now, I never will. You know.
I mean, on a similar note, and I don't know how much you could address this specifically, but obviously back earlier this year, there was the whole thing that went down in terms of the Mr. Knight suit on Moon Knight, where everyone is like, pay Declan, get Declan paid, that happened online.
I got paid.
You did get paid?
Yeah, no, I think... Just to clarify, like, I think I just said on Twitter, like, someone said, like, oh, I hope Declan gets paid. And I just, like, tweeted, like, that'd be nice. As in, that'd be nice. I had no idea whether I would or wouldn't, you know. And I think when the show was coming out, they gave me money to fly to the premiere. And they gave me money besides that, like, you know. But, I mean, I wasn't making a big deal beforehand, and I wasn't making a big deal afterwards. I saw all these things. I was like, Declan Chavi says, you know, X, Y, Z. I'm like, no, I just literally... meant it would be nice because I did not know if I would or not. Yeah. Hadn't a clue.
Yeah.
And I did. Great.
And then, and it was nice.
It was nice. But especially because, like, do you know, we, like, Mr. Knight, yeah, me and Warren, like, co-created Mr. Knight, but, like, it's part of Moon Knight. Like, so if I'm being honest, I think my situation is different to say, somebody who created a character from scratch. Mm-hmm. You know, I did not create Moon Knight. We created, like, a version of the character and all that. And, you know, I go into these things with my eyes wide open. Like, I am not, I expect nothing. I got something. So I was pleasantly surprised, you know.
Cool. Well, yeah. I mean, like Justin was saying, though, I do think that is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that is part of this push towards creator-owned work, because you understand that, yeah, you're working for Marvel, you're working for DC, all end of the day, they're going to control the stuff. They're going to own the stuff. They're going to make it into movies and TV. Maybe you get a cut. Maybe you don't. But if you do something like Old Dog, that's you. That's yours.
Yeah. Like, I mean, man, I did five issues of Deadpool. I have seen so many t-shirts with taking bits of panels that I did and making into t-shirts, covers, and everything. But like, I've seen so much Deadpool merch made from like drawings of mine. Now, is it annoying? Yes. Did I know I'd get nothing going in? Yes. So like,
yeah.
Look, do I think it's good? No. But I'm not going to bitch about something that I knew my eyes were open going in, you know? Now, yeah. The difference is, you know, now am I going to start doing Moon Knight or Old Dog t-shirts? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if anybody would even buy them. We'll see.
I would.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
one step. Sold. That's one. One.
No, but you know what? I think it is much better to just go and do your own thing rather than, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying you can't complain about stuff that isn't fair. Like, it's annoying. I bought two toys of the new Marvel Legends Moon Knight Mr. Figure, you know? Like, I have to go get those. You know?
Yeah.
That's annoying. It is annoying. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's totally fine. But it's not like I didn't know this, you know? Yeah, so I'm not saying it's great, but at the same time, I think there's things you can control and you can fix. And I think it's much more positive to just make my own stuff.
Yeah. I think that's 100%. That's the evolution, is you're moving forward and seeing the positives and negatives and then being like, you know what, I'm going to move forward into the positive without
I know as Mr. Art Cred about everything, and I don't regress any of that. Like, you know, I used to harp on all the time about like how artists didn't get as much credit. I think the conversation has changed. That's great. But I also don't think you can just moan about everything and expecting things to anybody to even pay attention. You know, there's a bit too much of that. Like, you know, like, you are not a golden ray of sunshine, you know. And yes, people should organize and group efforts are brilliant and stuff, but like, there's some stuff that you can make more progress doing your own thing, I think, rather than railing against systems that are already in place. I hope I'm not trying to make it sound like people shouldn't be pushing for better things. Like, they absolutely should. I just think,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pick your battles.
Just to clarify for our listeners who don't necessarily know, the art cred thing that you're talking about was just that there were all these TV and movie projects and different things coming out, let alone just comic projects where they'd be like, wow, X writer created this thing, period. And never mention the artist who is as important, if not more important, to the creation.
Well, you're talking about a visual medium of television.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, look, if all the Warren stuff hadn't happened in the last year, I guarantee you it would have been Warren Ellis's Mr. Knight. You know, across the board.
Yeah.
It would, like, so like, the fact that, you know, everyone's pretending he doesn't exist anymore means that, like, all of a sudden I'm getting way more attention for it. And you know what? I'll take it. Fine. You know, but you know, if not for that, it would have totally been that way. And like, so it's totally a still an issue, but it was, I think it was way more rife 6 years ago. I would see articles about comics and like, they would use artists' artwork and not even credit. Like, and like, yeah. I know that guy spent a day drawing that page and he doesn't even get a mention, you know. Now, I think things are actually much, much better now. And I just stopped complaining about it because every time I talk about it online, just gobshites online would turn it into a writer versus artist conversation. Argument, actually, not a conversation. And I just don't want to be part of the toxic, like, I just stopped talking about it because it all just twisted every time. And I do think it's gotten much, much better. I think, like, people are correcting me sometimes. I'm like, hey, I'm the guy who fucking
you know. Well, I mean, I will say to your credit, and I know, you know, like, you've sold one t-shirt to Pete so far in terms of changing one person. Like,
my, it's $70, is, Pete, by the way. 70.
I'm still in. I'm still in. I love it that much.
My day job is entertainment journalism. I cover streaming TV and movies and other things.
Here we
I've
go.
Worked in other places. Hold on. The reason that I mentioned it is because
fucking job
I always tried to mention the writers and artists beforehand, but it's definitely like, since you started doing that, a calculated thought process when I'm writing about a comic book that has been made into a TV and movie and I'm mentioning who adapted it, to be like, I am definitely going to put down the writer and the artist because of what you did. And yeah. I emphasize that, you know, cool, I edit people. I emphasize it to my writers as well. So
well, like you see, maybe if, only a couple of people. But if, like, important. You know, Garth Ennis wrote The Boys, brilliant. But, like, you know, Derek Robertson drew every page of that. Like, you know, it's if you're looking at it from, like, I mean, I'm not diminishing the... I mean, as now somebody who writes more, like, I definitely am totally all about taking advantage of artists. But, like, you know, just the sheer labor involved, like, it's not necessarily, there isn't parity there. Like, you know, it's not to say that, like, you know, the work hours mean everything, but it just, to me, it just seems so skewed. Like, and I was never arguing artists were more important. It was always just, like, co-creators.
It's up on the shelf.
Yeah, because you could work as an artist for 20 years doing loads of books, and if you happen to do them all with Neil Gaiman, then all of a sudden, you know, like actually, I don't hear anybody talk about the artist of the new Sandman show. Now, I don't really read, I've never really read Sandman, so, and I know there's a million artists, but, like,
yeah,
you know, it happens.
To be honest, that's driving me a little insane, because
not one mention.
They're so important to that book, and I understand that he was the person that wrote all of them, and there were different artists throughout, but at the same time, like, that wouldn't have worked without Colleen Durand, and it wouldn't have worked without everybody else.
I was just gonna say, the TV show just pulls so much from that, obviously. Like, it's not like the TV show is like, we're using a different palette or whatever. Like, it's like, no, that's the comic book. Various styles. It's not even just like, we just did one artist. Like, clearly they're pulling from the whole breadth of it, so it's like, you got to throw some names around.
But that's it. So you could work with a big writer and get a big book. Brilliant. But then if anything happens with that, everyone forgets you exist. And, like, if you're lucky enough to work with all these great writers and have, like, a whole, like, library of stuff, but nobody acknowledges. I just don't. And that is, to go back to our very questions, part of why I wanted to write my own stuff, because, like, you know, old dog, nobody... The bad side is I can't hide behind a good writer or a good artist. Right. You know, it's all I'm showing my bare arse with this book. You know,
on the cover.
Yeah, there's a bull quote.
I do want to ask you about another book, though, that you're a part of the team on, and it does feel like you're sort of ushering in a certain way, but I don't know what the relationship is. Rogues Gallery, which is also coming out from Image, which also been loving. Every issue of it on the stack, and for anybody who hasn't checked it out, it's this actress quits a superhero show that's super popular. A couple of fans, quote unquote, decide to rob her house, and it just kind of spirals out from there. What's it like working on that book? You have I think it's co-story by credit or co-plotting credit. So what's the process there?
A story. I mean, to be honest, it's more of a ceremonial title. Like, really, Hannah's written the book, but Hannah kind of came to me a while ago. She's from Ireland, and we were friendly, and she had this idea for the book, but she didn't really have the facilities to actually get it made. And I thought it was a really cool idea. I just knew, you know, you'd need a good artist, you need a good colorist. Like, so I basically assembled, I did the Anchorman, you know, news team assemble. And I got a good crew together. But no, to be fair, I think Hannah had a kind of a more of a singular story, and I just kind of helped her break it into, like, a 4-issue miniseries, you know, rather than, like, say, it could have been a graphic novel, but I think because it's about an actress who's on a TV show, again, it needed to be episodic. But I thought it was a really cool idea because we're in an interesting place, and you know, know this yourself, like, with all the media stuff, you know, where comics and media mix is in a very strange place right now. You know, you can be a huge superhero fan and never read comics. You've just watched all the Arrowverse shows or whatever. Like, you know, I know you're not a comics fan, but there are people who, they're like, I love superheroes, and they watch all the shows. They don't read the comics. I read the comics. I don't watch the shows, to be honest, for the most part. But they are, you can say that they don't love superheroes, because they do. They just, it's just not their medium, comics.
Yeah.
And I do think we're in an interesting place where, like, you have actors who were in roles in one IP and in DC universe and different in or the two different characters. Like, it's very strange how media and comics have really merged. I thought it was a really cool concept to kind of, like, analyze, you know, this kind of social element of like fandom, of media, of genre. Like, it was just a nice mix of all that, and I was kind of surprised nobody had done it before. So really, I just kind of took Hannah's idea and just helped her fashion it into a comic and assembled, like, creators who I thought would do a really good job.
And let me say on that, like, I'm so surprised in a great way the story unfolds from first to second. And I have a strong feeling we're going to talk about this third issue that's coming out, because it progresses in a way that I find so, it catches me off guard every issue. And so I like,
that's good. Really again, that was cool. I would say, I don't think kind of mind me saying this, it was more linear originally, yeah. But because we're making it episodic, I personally thought that, like, you know, we all hate on characters and actors and stuff like that, and it would be good to kind of go in on that level and then flip the perspective.
You made me feel implicit in it. In the
good,
story,
I think this kind of toxic fandom thing that everyone goes on about is kind of overlaid sometimes, but also, like, we're all guilty of it to some degree, you know. Yeah. And I think it was better for the reader to sink into it and then have to go, because, you know, it's very easy to just kind of like demonize people as if they're just evil, whereas like most people are sad, lonely, confused, whatever it is, but like none of these people are born as to be shits, you know. And there is something about, I don't know, like, we do get kind of ugly about people sometimes, but that was it. Yeah, I definitely wanted the reader to have to kind of reevaluate where they're coming from on that.
It's really good.
Yeah, because it does make you complicit in the story. Yeah.
Complicit. I said implicit. Mm. I meant complicit.
Loving that book. I know this is a lot of stuff already. Is there anything else that people should be looking out for that's coming from you, Declan?
Well, I just had a story in Star Trek 400 last week, I think it was, where I just got to write a Star Trek story, so I was delighted. I still have Time Before Time issue. So, still, what's the next one? I've totally lost track. The next issue, Time Before Time, is out in, I think, a couple of weeks. That's with, that's the last issue by Eric Swadsky, I think, on art, which is brilliant. And then we'll have a one-shot story with Lauren Knight doing a self-contained story in that. And then we soon have Jorge Coelho take over on the next arc. So yeah, every arc, the artist changes. Old Dog is out next week.
Yeah.
There's other stuff too. I lose track, lads. Covers. Think of a Carnage cover out tomorrow.
All right.
Covered.
Awesome.
Who knows? I don't know. Isn't it enough?
It's a lot of stuff. It's enough.
We're not saying it's not enough,
it's great. Old Dog is so good. I can't wait for people to check it out.
Thanks a million, guys. I really appreciate it. Like, I'm still like so dying to know what people think of it. Like, so I, yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
You've always been our golden ray of sunshine.
And don't forget, when you're in London, look for that thing that Justin's going to hide.
I'm hiding it tomorrow.
I'll keep my two eyes out.
All right. Have a good night, Declan.
Thanks a million, guys.
Cheers. Nice. Congrats.
All right. That was Declan Shalvey. Definitely check out Old Dog, which is out September 28th from Image Comics. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. And folks, we are going to go to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you gotta do is drop a question and ask a question over on Crowncast or in the comments over on YouTube. They can be about absolutely anything. But first, other than The Old Dog, which I am just finishing up here, and it was delightful. Thank you again, Brett. What are you guys drinking?
Drinking a Zadie's Lager, you know, Baltimore special.
Nice. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah.
Real quick. I feel like we haven't really heard.
It's a beer. So you drink it.
Oh, nice. Do you know what I miss? I miss the period where you got tricked by somebody at a weird beer store and getting the strangest beers possible because you got too scared. That was my favorite drinking period for you, Pete.
Oh, thanks. Where I was overpaying for really pretentious beers that were like four beers for $20.
Yeah, like a strawberry.
Peppermint bourbon whiskey stout? Oh, no.
Justin, what about you? What do they got on Bonnie Old England?
I'm having a classic British beverage. A Peroni.
Hey.
I got this from the hotel bar because they let me bring it up to my room.
I'll tell you what, Peroni after a long day, perfection. So there you go. Why don't we go to some Peroni? Why don't we go to some questions here? The first one's from Kevin. What are your favorite, or for Justin, favorite with you, sports themed comics titles?
Ooh, good. Sports themes.
Sports themes.
Sports themes comics. Oh my gosh, I'm completely blanking. There's a book called Fence, which is all about fencing. That is pretty delightful.
Ooh, I remember when we
talked about it. Do a power bomb.
Do a power bomb. That's Daniel Warren Johnson's wrestling comic. That is excellent.
CWL.
CWL that we talked about earlier. I feel like that might be where this was inspired from, perhaps.
Very well could be.
Maybe.
Obviously, NFL Super Pro from back in the day.
Sure. Oh, wow. Sure, yeah.
Absolutely.
He wasn't just good at football. He was, like, really good.
Ladybugs with Rodney Dangerfield. That's a comic,
great,
right?
Great comic book.
I watched it one frame at a time, so, you know.
Wow.
You really went a deep dive on Ladybugs.
Yeah, we Ladybugs Polaroids.
You took Polaroids of every frame and then laid them out.
Absolutely.
Good use of your time.
Great. There we go. I'm sure that answered that question. We got a recommendation over on YouTube. This isn't even a question. It's from Ramsey Hassan. I recommend Justin to check out Gosh Comics in Soho, London, the best comic shop in the UK. Very hipster, LOL.
That's great. I have a little bit of time off tomorrow in the later part of the day. I may pop over.
Nice. And we do have a couple of questions here as well. This is from Julian Lobato. If you could hop into any superhero's life, who would it be and at what point in time of their life?
Wow. Great question.
Huh.
What do you think? If Frankencastle at the beginning, he was like feeling pretty good. And then later he was fighting the monsters, which is like.
I mean, here's the thing. No superhero is having a good time at any time of their life for any extended period. So there's no good answer here. It's sort of like cutting your losses and deciding which is the least bad.
So, I think Peter Parker in Spider-Man 3 when Venom was dancing. Pretty fun time.
Oh, my God.
That was like, this is my villain. I got this guy.
Yeah.
Shout out Stray Bullets answer when the X-Men play baseball. Here for that.
I mean, to that note, Chris Claremont era X-Men, at least like they got to hang out and do their soap opera stuff a little bit in between getting attacked by the Brood and whatnot.
There was a lot of drama going on.
A lot of drama.
I feel like, I would be a Cyclops and then kill myself. Is that too dark?
I love how you thought about that the whole time Alex and I were talking. And then we're like, yeah, I'm going to say it.
I was like, but the problem is I kept trying to move on and I couldn't.
Let me throw this at you, Pete. What character that you love, because you have a particular set of tastes, has any fun in them?
I feel like sometimes Beast has a good time. You know, he reads a good book upside down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
That's fun. And honestly, that's a fun pastime, is reading a book upside down.
Yeah. Hmm.
Here's the thing, honestly, and this is fucked up of me. This is a personal thing. I can't think of the Beast without thinking of Frasier.
Wait, what did you say? You faded Frasier. Out.
Yeah, yeah.
When I think of the Beast, Frasier. All I can think of is
Frasier. Oh, yeah. Well, it was so iconic.
Truly.
Yes. I was going to say, as a semi-serious answer, like, I was trying to think if there's any good period in Gotham, and the answer is probably no.
Yeah.
But
Gotham, the TV
maybe,
show? Gotham City?
No. Gotham City. Maybe Zero Gotham Year, Park? Just because, like, get to unplug, wander through a wilderness in Gotham City, have a nice time.
I don't know. There is a lot of that. For to be Batman during Zero Year?
Yeah. Oh, no, I was thinking citizen.
You were given the choice of jumping into any superhero, and you were like, random Gotham citizen who's likely murdered. What's your answer? That's the answer.
Possibly. I'm a regular New York citizen who is likely going to be murdered, so it's not too much of a downgrade.
That's why you got to drink the ooze like Peter Page. I mean, I got to go Peter Parker, Spider-Man. As much as his bad stuff was happening.
You have a witch.
Era?
Yeah.
Craven's Last Hunt.
I'm going to say mid.
Are you going to say now? Are
no, you going to say now? Now is he stressed. Mid Mary Jane marriage. When he was like dealing with his stress,
exactly my fucking point.
Yeah,
Spider-Man stopped being cool when they fucking killed that relationship.
Well,
thank you for proving my point, Justin.
Let's move on from that question to one over here on Crowdcast. This is from Eduardo. Apropos of Justin's global jet setting, do you have any memorable stories of visiting comic book stores while traveling?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I went into a really fun store in Maine where the guy was like showing me around and then ended up just like pitching me his comics that he wrote and stuff like that. So it was kind of hilarious. I just started trusting him less and less. And it was, I had to buy his comic at that point because I was in too deep, but it was definitely worth checking out.
Nice. Sounds like you bought into a pyramid scheme sort of.
Yep.
I'm going to shout out, I went to a comic store in Paris and checked out some of the French comics, which is a sort of totally different universe, and the much smaller section of American comics printed in French, which were cool. Also, just back in the day, going to Meltdown Comics out in L.A.
Oh, yeah. Meltdown was
cool. I took a trip for my dad's 70th birthday. We went to Denmark and all around Norway. And I think it was in Oslo. I stopped in a very cool comic book shop there and got some Norwegian volumes of Walking Dead.
Walking Dead.
What I remember, I brought you back as presents. And you're like, oh, thanks.
I liked it. Thank you.
Thank you for finally saying something.
Yeah.
We said thank you. Though I will say, I don't know where it is. I wish I had it. I wish I could have that in my hand. I don't know where it is. But I know I have it.
Yes, I did also in that comic book shop search for Lock and Key in Norwegian, and I don't think I found it. I think they just had the English versions, which really bummed me out.
I tell you what I miss is in New York City, they used to have like a lot of different comic book shops that unfortunately didn't make it.
That's right. New York City is traveling for you now, Pete.
Yeah. There would be like comic book shops that had like old school video games in there and stuff where you could like really hang out. And they weren't like, hey, read some or get out of here, kid. You know, when you could like actually hang out. And
are you imagining that you went to the comic book shop from Kick-Ass, the movie? Is that what's going
on? No. Okay. I've lived in New York City for a long time and there was definitely shops that have come and gone. And there was one where you went downstairs. And there was all these video games and stuff.
In Brooklyn? Clean.
No, in New York.
It was New York upper is west side. Brooklyn part.
We got a super hard question from Mac over here on YouTube. Favorite comic or series of the year so far?
So far.
Ooh.
That's tough. I usually forget literally everything we've read except for this week until we do our end of the year stuff. I still do think, this is like a little, this is top of mind because there's a new issue this week, but Ice Cream Man, one of our top series, ago, continues to deliver at a high level every single issue. Loving that. I'll also say Rogues Gallery that we were just talking about. I'm loving that run so
really
far.
Enjoying
That's really
that.
Good.
I have to echo what's in the comments from Stray Bullet and Ben the Border Collie. Nightwing right now is like just, and I'm a sucker for the Dick Grayson Barbara Gordon relationship, and we are operating on all cylinders in that situation.
I gotta repeat myself and say do a power bomb, but also Superman Son of Kal-El has been really great.
I'll also give a shout out. We talk about all of these books, but the Massiverse books that include Radiant Black, Radiant Red, Rogue Sun, and something new that I'm forgetting the name of. But all of those books are really good, and I found they're the most frequent thing that I recommend to people recently, just as something that, like, hey, this is a new universe you can get into. It doesn't have years of continuity like Marvel. It doesn't have years of continuity like DC. If you want to jump into something absolutely new and fresh that's slowly fleshing itself out, all the titles are solid. That's been, for me, a really big story this year, just in terms of reading how much I enjoy all of those books.
100%. I'll also shout out the Silver Coin. I've been really enjoying.
Oh, dude. Fuck that, dude. Too scary.
Department of Truth. Any of the James the Fourth verse stuff, I feel like I've been just
in the bag for
almost across the board.
But definitely stay tuned. We're only a couple of months away from doing our best of the year, where we'll actually think about this more than off the cuff. Yeah. This is from Nelson Martinez over on YouTube. I love the slang from the show. Since watching Reservation Dogs, have you guys wanted to include the terms studis, scoden, or shit asses in your conversations?
For sure.
Like I have.
Yeah, shit ass for sure, man. Yeah. Oh, man. That's such a great show.
Can you use that in sort of in context, Pete?
Yeah, what's up, shit ass? It's just like saying, what's up, douchebag? Like, you know, it's just, you're just.
I just want to hear it.
Any person, yeah, you're just kind of like, yeah. It's a term of endearment when you call someone shit ass.
Oh, very nice. All right, we got one last one. This is very apropos of our comic book show from Stray Bullet here. How is it possible that longjohnsilver.com is the number 6 most visited online shopping website in 2022? It's not like some weird porn version or anything. It's the actual website of a fast food fried fish restaurant. I just assume you guys know the answers to everything.
That's a dangerous assumption, first off.
Yeah, first off, you need to get out more, and I'm sorry.
But let me jump over to longjohnsilvers.com, because I agree. This seems like a mistake or scam.
So this is a list that Stray Bullet posted at our Patreon Slack. Patreon.
Get on that Patreon, man. We have a lot of fun on there.
We do have a good time. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I actually, longjohnsilvers.com is my main search engine. That's where I go to find pretty much everything.
It's my page. When I open up my computer.
Yeah, I see what's going on with Long John Silver's first. What's new with the fried fish? Do they have any new shrimp? Do they have any new cod or anything like that? And then, like, once I've established that, honestly, it's pretty much the end of the day. It's quitting time, and I'm ready to go home.
Wow. Oh, it's a short day you have, bro.
Oh, no,
I mean, here's the thing. I think part of it is there are Long John Silvers in, like, every state.
Like, really?
I got to tell you, and I know, obviously, a lot of people disagree with me. The absolute last thing I ever want to eat in the world is fast food fish. Just, that is really? The literal bottom of my list.
Huh.
Never.
Huh.
Fish from a fast food restaurant. I know lots of people eat the fillet of fish. They eat lots of Long John Silvers. No thanks.
Fast food means they're getting it out to you fresh, because it's here we go. We got it. Here you go. It's fast.
Is that how it works?
Right from the sea to you.
Product. There you go.
Yeah. A lot of times they fish for the fish right in the
location. Oh, they have like a little. They have like a little pond. They have a little pond.
Like a river or a creek.
Oh yeah.
Fly fishing in the store.
That's great. Cool. Yeah, do you know, New York City was actually built around a Long John Silver's?
Yeah.
It's true. Yes. Well, great question. I think we've answered all of these questions effectively, and it is time to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All righty. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. And Alex, are we looking for a first hand up person? Or
sure are. If we got a first hand up here, you can just come on in and win $25. Say hand up, say me, anything like that in the comments. If you're over on YouTube, it's going to take a little bit longer, but hey, we're happy to do it anyway. But anybody,
they also
Justin,
sell tacos at Long John Silver's.
What?
So really, maybe it's a real diversity of
fish tacos,
food options.
Or meat tacos.
Do they sell any meat at Long John Silver's, or is it all just fish?
Great question, Alex.
Today's trivia is for a $25 gift card to Long John Silver's.
Nobody's gonna try to get in.
Yeah, okay, but, no, yeah, I think Stray Bullet should do it. Bullet should do it for a $25 gift card to Long John Silver's.
They do sell chicken at Long John.
That's what I thought.
LJS, as I say. But yes.
Ben the Border Collie says, hopefully a porn site. I think he's on a little bit of a delay, is my guess. Well, we don't have anybody who is interested in
all right, well, this. That means you guys do it and we donate to charity, right?
Oh, Kevin says, hand up, fine. All right, there we go. Just Kevin saving us from the awkward back. Silence.
I believe Kevin is going to be doing this trivia in his
full character.
His Yorkshire accent.
David Quinley said, I'll do it, but a little bit late. I'll let David know.
Nice. That's that YouTube delay.
It's a YouTube delay.
You got it. You got to get off LJ Silver.
Kevin right now is deciding what puppet he should use. Oh, hey! What's going on?
Lou.
Kevin,
is Kevin.
Me,
just
you? Give me a moment to get some light.
Okay. All right.
All right. This is going to be good.
Yeah. Got it really nice. Look, he's getting his ring light up.
Yeah.
It's just up. Kevin is actually coming to us live from one of the apartments in the movie Seven.
Kevin turning on some sort of campfire light. It seems
Wow! There, the lantern no,
the ring light just doesn't want to stay in place.
Nice. Sweet tie. You know, I'm glad I'm getting the
Kevin. Oh, he's got a tie on. It's 1:10 a.m. in London. It's got
he's like a young Milo. You know what I mean? Right. Loves ties.
My son, except for the young part.
Okay, Kevin. We're going to be competing this week for a $25 gift card to Long John Silver's.
Are you serious?
100% serious. Take it away.
Well, since they don't have any anywhere near.
You can always order and have it shipped in.
You can have it.
Yeah,
you're near water.
Some fried fish nugs.
Sorry, Kevin. The decision has been made because it's too hilarious. Take it away, Pete.
Okay, today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Joel Turkle, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Question number one. On 10-4, what will be celebrating 70 years? Is it A, Mad Magazine, B, Chia Pets, or C, Edward James Olmos? So it's either A, or you're wrong.
Nice.
I'll go with A Mad Magazine.
He's got a shark. He's got a shark.
Very.
I'm going to be the closest to hand, and also Long John Silver's, of course. So I'm going to go with the shark.
Makes sense. Okay.
I just love how many puppets you have potentially close to
hand. We haven't even seen that bottom of that closet. Okay. Question number two: new IDW book called Crashing deals with a doctor who blanks superheroes. Is it A, dooms them, B, treats them, or C, Daryl Hannah's them? So it's either B, or you're wrong.
I will go with treats.
All right, great.
Crushing. Makes sense. Dooms them.
Question number three, last one. Marvel's going to do some Halloween-themed one-shots. Name one character that is said to be in Crypt of Shadows number one. Is it A, Man-Thing, B, Blade, or C, Rutger Howard? Is it A, Man-Thing, pick A, or B, Blade?
I will go with Man-Thing,
who Man-Thing of course, is correct.
Burned the candle at both ends and, sorry, I'm forgetting the rest of Rutger Hauer's speech from Blade Runner.
Oh, look at this guy. Oh,
man.
Kevin, how deep places? You go. You're what? Answering double trivia at the same time while also pulling a quote out from Blade Runner.
I remember Rutger Hauer. You're talking about his speech from Blade Runner where he says, like, oh, man, I'm really burning the candle at both ends. Right?
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Well, and since Justin did ask... this be my Yorkshire accent, which of course is not Yorkshire at all.
That's a pirate accent, Kevin. Yeah.
I hope you enjoy, speaking of pirates, your fish sandwiches and fish tacos and other things at Long John Silver's. We'll be getting that gift card off to you. It'll be very convenient. Always good seeing you.
Here be Long John Silver.
Kevin, great to see you. And of course, you were right. We're talking about the 1982 cult hit Blade Runner.
Not a called hit.
Wait, yep. What?
Yep. The cult hit.
Not a called hit. Blade Runner.
No, it's huge. It's huge. It's a big deal.
A cult hit doesn't mean huge. It means cult, well, like small group of people.
Right.
My favorite cult hit in the beginning, is Titanic.
It wasn't a hit.
Titanic. I love it. Cult, know,
culture wise, it was a hit. So that's why I said
cult. Oh, cult is short for culture?
In this instance, yes.
As we all know, comics are cool. What comics are you looking forward to that are coming out this week, Pete?
Oh, man, I'm so glad you asked. Fables number 15 and also The Deadliest Bouquet number 2.
It's definitely not Fables number 15, though, I think.
Yeah, it's probably Fables 115.
Number, I would say
Justin, what about you?
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting comics coming out, a lot of horror-y stuff.
Yeah, a lot of way,
Which
it's almost like we're getting close to Halloween or something.
That very well could be. It's Fables number 155. Just
okay.
For
well, there
context.
Was a one and a five in it, so get off my nuts.
All numbers are the same number.
I mean, we talked about these comics
short
already.
One number.
I gotta give it up for that.
Yeah,
you,
Pete,
that's really
next,
important.
Next month, instead of giving you $155, I'm gonna give you $15, right? That's cool. Oh.
I gotta give it up for Nightwing number 96.
Of course,
Nightwing,
you do.
Just crushing it, and I'm feeling the love. And I guess to shout out one more, I want to go with Exterminators number 1. This was a wild ride of a comic.
Really?
It really caught me off guard in its sort of the whole thing.
I'll give a shout out to Vanish number 1 from Image Comics. This is a new title from Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman. This team has earned more than enough trust that I will jump into any book that they are going to do. Very excited to check this out. All of these are going to be in our Stack podcast that pops up Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club feed and its own dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we need to thank. Thank you, Mike Spears Jr., for coming on to talk about CWL. Check that out on Etsy and Amazon and other places. Also, Etsy. Declan Sheldy, thank you for calling in from Justin's hometown of the UK to talk about Image Comics Old Dog that comes
not
out
in
September
the UK.
28th.
Not in the UK.
Ireland.
Not,
Ireland.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, man.
What,
I don't
do you
know.
Think it's all one thing over there?
It's all one thing. We're all one globe, man. One love. One love. Also, check out Rogues Gallery, you mentioned from Image Comics, Time Before Time from Image Comics, and a bunch of other things. Next week on the show, we are going to have the team from the book Wonder is going to be here. Blaise Hemingway, Bryce Anderson, and Brian Unkles. Also, Joe Corallo is going to be here to talk about The Never-Ending Party. Couple of other things we need to plug. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, rolling out new episodes about She-Hulk every week. Also, The Doom Room, our Doom Patrol podcast, rolls out Thursdays with new episodes. And the Umbrella Podcademy, our Umbrella Academy podcast, is finally back. New episodes, we promise, every Monday until we finish season 3, so check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this podcast and all the podcasts we do. Subscribe and follow on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Take care of yourselves out there.
I love you.